drama with the Golden State Warriors, is this going to derail any part of their season?
And we look at the fit with Jimmy Butler and the 76ers, and what the hell is going on with Markelle Fultz?
And we lost a legend, Stan Lee, so we do NBA Superheroes. It's the Wednesday Locked On NBA. Let's go!
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Wednesday edition of the Locked On NBA Podcast. Welcome, everybody. We are your Wednesday host. I am John Corrales of the Locked On Celtics Podcast. Find my work on Boston.com, RedsArmy.com, Patreon.com/John Corrales, and of course, find me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John.
And I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans Podcast. You can find me over on Twitter at NolaJake.
As we said in the beginning here, lots to get to with our superhero. It's going to be fun. Game of the night, Denver and Houston, interesting stuff happening there. But we're going to start with the Warriors and all of the drama that's happening in their locker room. Of course, they played the Hawks tonight, and they went into halftime down 3 points to the Atlanta Hawks. They actually end up handling the Hawks, but the result doesn't really matter. What really matters is what's going to happen with their locker room drama. The Warriors beating the Hawks, whatever, it doesn't impact their long-term stuff. Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated joining us now. First appearance here on the Wednesday Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm making the full tour. I did David's, then I got the guys on Tuesday, and now we're doing the Wednesday show, so it's great.
Yeah, just be careful of that Friday show. Those guys are maniacs.
Oh, they're nuts.
Oh, so maybe they're protecting me. Are they easing me in slowly but surely, making sure I'm like neck deep before they drown me?
Yeah, it's a gradual working up to the Friday Fun Fest. But those guys are great, but it's different feel. Definitely different feel. It's more Animal House.
Perfect. Well,
speaking of Animal House, Golden State Warriors are all of a sudden they just exploded into a bit of a mess. Draymond Green suspended for tonight's game. And just craziness. And Ben, you were there. So why don't you just kind of give us your firsthand account of what you saw and experienced?
Yeah, for sure. Well, first things first. I mean, Twitter is always a little bit more chaotic than usually the real scene was. I mean, this was not like guys fighting in the locker room like the Clippers Rockets last year or anything like that. I mean, I think it really started early in the game. Kevin Durant was just frustrated at the referees basically all night. He was in foul trouble. He wound up fouling out, and you could just tell he was kind of in a sour mood. And it didn't really turn his anger from like Mark Davis and the other officials towards Draymond really until that final sequence where Draymond, you know, commits the turnover rather than passing to Kevin Durant. They go to overtime. Durant fouls out, and they wind up losing. In the locker room scenario, it was weird, but like on a scale of 1 to 10, it was really only like a 3 or a 4. Like Kevin Durant bolted out of there. Clearly he was the one who was the most upset about whatever words were exchanged kind of behind closed doors with Draymond. So he was just gone. So he wasn't there. Draymond didn't do a scrum media availability, but he did talk to a few reporters here and there. He didn't seem all that concerned. And everybody else was more or less just trying to play it off and say, look, you know, these kinds of things happen. Yes, they were upset with each other over the play, but it wasn't that big of a deal. Sean Livingston said that. Klay Thompson said that. And that was pretty much it. I mean, most of the Warriors beat writers left that game thinking like, well, yes, you know, it's obvious that they were yelling on the bench and something probably happened, but it wasn't really that big of a deal. So fast forward 24 hours and you've got, you know, Draymond being suspended and fined, you know, essentially like $200,000 plus for whatever he said to Kevin Durant. Now he's not going to play, you know, tonight against the Hawks. And everyone's wondering, well, what could he possibly have said that was so terrible? And, you know, this is just speculation on my part, but it does sound like he raised the issue of Kevin Durant's free agency. And one thing I know about Kevin, he's very, very prideful. So if Draymond went anywhere towards the thing of like, come on, man, we don't even know if you're with us. Like, we don't know what you're planning to do next year. Are you part of this group or not? If Draymond questioned Kevin in that manner at all, that would be like, you know, basically, you know, questioning his honor, his integrity, and that would provoke a serious reaction from Kevin Durant. So my sort of speculation would be that that's probably what upset him so much because look, You know, Kevin swears all the time. He's a profane guy. He loves talking trash. He's not afraid to go back and forth with people. So any of the profanities or any of that stuff is not going to get under his skin in any way. It had to be something a little bit different or outside the bounds. And my guess is it had something to do with kind of his commitment to the organization, you know, vis-a-vis free agency. And that would really explain why the Warriors organization backed him too.
I'm sorry, Jake. I just want to, this goes back to the parade where they started kind of questioning his contract. Like, this is almost part of like a history with the Warriors. They were questioning his contract as soon as they won the championship, and now it's coming up here.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's always been uneasy because he's the new guy, right? And at some point, you don't want to feel like the new guy anymore, especially when you've won two finals MVP awards and you hit the two biggest shots in those finals. You want to feel like you did it. And I do think there's a little bit of the, you know, the elitist attitude from the people who are sort of the original Warriors. And I don't blame them for that. I mean, they turned the Warriors from a laughingstock into a championship destination within, what, 5 years? I mean, it was a massive turnaround. With, you know, Steph Curry and Draymond and Clay and Steve Kerr. But, you know, that doesn't make Kevin feel very good. And I think ultimately he does seem like he's still weighing what he wants to do in the future. And I think if you're the organization, that means you have to be in full on recruitment mode all season long, right? Like, for example, you know, Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, was sitting next to Kevin Durant's agent and really close friend, Rich Kleiman, at the Staples Center all last night. I mean, those guys were basically attached at the hip, right? And of course, we know the Clippers, who they were playing, is one team that's, you know, vying to pry Kevin Durant away from the Warriors, right? So I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence. But one way you don't recruit a guy is by screaming at him and questioning his commitment in the locker room in front of his teammates. And I think, you know, that's where the tension comes in. And I think that's why you saw the organization take the step against Draymond to slap him on the wrist and say, like, come on, man, you have to be better than that.
So it sounds like they've kind of taken the right steps on what they need to do to kind of fix this and move on from it. But is this potentially going to be a big deal for this team as the year goes on? It, you know, I know you said you were speculating, but is this something that's kind of maybe kind of bubbling under the surface for this Warriors team?
Well, look, everybody knows guys' free agent status. I don't even think it's under the surface. I think it's kind of out in the open. So it's going to be an issue. You know, one thought I had about all of this, though, imagine if Steve Kerr had just called timeout, right? Like, if he calls timeout, Draymond never has the turnover on the final play of regulation, so Draymond and KD are never sniping at each other. If he calls timeout, KD has the ball in his hands with the game on the line. If he hits the shot, he's the hero. If he doesn't, he can't blame anybody else because at least he had the ball in his hands, right? And you go forward, if Kerr calls timeout, there's no argument in the locker room. There's no suspension and there's no fine of Draymond for $200,000 for missing a game, you know, cause he's being suspended for conduct detrimental to the team. I mean, if I'm Draymond, I'm looking at Steve Kerr. I'm like, come on, man. Like, I appreciate you trusting me, like putting the ball in my hands, you know, running up the court in transition. But if it's going to wind up costing me $200,000 because of it, just take the timeout and give the ball to KD. It's not that complicated. And I do think it's one of these things where these new age coaches, sometimes they can get a little bit too cute, right? They think, well, we want to be able to rush up the court against a defense that's not set. What would you rather have? KD shooting a jumper against a set defense or Draymond and KD in rumors about how much they hate each other for the next 3 days? Draymond out $200,000, not happy about it, and Kevin Durant angry because he doesn't feel like part of the team. That seems like a pretty easy decision, doesn't it?
Right, right. You know, if you had that hindsight, if you had that crystal ball. Okay, so moving forward now, we have to move forward. There has to be some repair of this relationship. If Draymond went to a place that was so egregious that they had to suspend him, does this become something bigger than the typical every team has a fight, every team goes through some things, sometimes you hear about it, sometimes you don't? Is what Draymond said so critical, so damaging, that now you've got issues moving forward?
Well, I'm curious what you guys would say about that, but my initial reaction is no. I feel like if Draymond just gives him an honest apology, they can, you know, handshake it out and it'll be done. But I also don't think it's a coincidence that this happens when Steph Curry's out. You know, I also think, like, Steph Curry can heal a lot of wounds. You know, he can make the game a lot more fun for everybody. He can make it feel like more of a team where everybody's involved and feeling valued. So to me, the combination of like, you know, a hat in hand apology from Draymond and the return of Steph Curry should probably get the Warriors going back, you know, kind of in the right direction. But if you guys feel differently, I'd love to hear why.
Well, I don't think I feel differently on that. It's just, they're so good. Their sights are a title and nothing else that like, if you can't get past this, I think that's a bigger issue. And it seems like when Curry comes back, you're winning again. Things kind of get fixed. This is no big deal.
Yeah. Look, Curry is the guy that kind of takes the edge off because he's so kind of like, for lack of a better term, gregarious. He's always fun. He's just kind of like, you can't be mad at Steph Curry, no matter what. But we all know that Durant is a little tightly wound. And Draymond will not stop talking. I think there's something there. And especially because the rumors of Durant to New York or Durant at least having a foot out the door are not going to stop. Like that's going to constantly come up. So I think there's going to be some sort of pressure there for at least the foreseeable future, the short term. And then we'll have to see if they can get past it. They're so talented that they can get past it. I think the biggest signal that this is serious is that Klay Thompson had to stand up and say something in the locker room, which is probably the most shocking development out of all of this, that Klay Thompson stood up and said, hey, enough. And Klay Thompson never has to do that. He's always so chill and laid back. So that to me is the biggest signal that this hit a place that is kind of like that nerve in the tooth where it's like, you need a root canal here, something serious, or you got to figure out how to play through it.
Yeah, but at the same point, there's so much talent on this team that even if they have some kind of discord in the locker room and guys aren't talking to each other, I don't think that takes them out of, say, being the title favorite, right?
No. I mean, it's not going to derail their season, I don't think, but I'll put it this way. Isn't the biggest threat right now to the Golden State Warriors this thing that we're talking about right now? More than any other team out there in the league, save for Toronto and even nobody here really trusts the Toronto Raptors, even with us, the start that they're on. Like, the biggest threat to the Warriors is the Warriors, and this is the first signal that there could be a serious threat to the Warriors.
Yeah, well, you know, go back to even, you know, 2016, the only team that's been able to beat them has been themselves. I mean, Draymond getting suspended, that was a self-inflicted loss in the finals. You go back to last season, I didn't think, you know, everyone really praised Houston's defense in the Western Conference Finals. I thought it was good, but I also thought KD was getting every shot he wanted. And when their offense wasn't looking good, it was mostly because he was just shooting like 35% instead of the normal 50% that he shoots from the field, right? So I would chalk that up as, you know, kind of being a self-inflicted wound, but obviously it wasn't fatal because they pulled out that series. And then I think it's going to be the same thing this year. I mean, I don't think that they're panicked. I think they're fine about all this. And even Klay, like by the time he talked to the media, he was pretty composed because you look around the league, who scares them? I don't think there's a second good team. I mean, they're not going to be afraid of Toronto. I can promise you that. Kyle Lowry in his first finals and a bunch of young guys are not going to be able to guard Kevin Durant and Steph Curry when it really matters. They're not afraid of anybody else in the Eastern Conference to me. And you look at the West, like, I really like Portland. I really like Denver. Great stories. They're not going to beat Golden State 4 out of 7. Forget about it. And Houston's not even in the playoff picture yet. So I think if I'm Golden State, it's sort of like, well, not only are we getting Curry back, but by the way, like we haven't even played Cousins yet, you know? So I think they're going to be okay.
They will. They will. We'll get back to it. There's going to be a lot more with this. Just if you want all of the inside stuff on the Warriors, go to the Lockdown Warriors podcast. We've got all of our teams are represented on the Lockdown Podcast Network. So I'm going to push the Lockdown Warriors podcast because they're going to go in depth much more than we can. So, go check that out.
So we've decided the Warriors aren't going to win a title whatsoever because of all of this thing. And now we can shift to the team that's going to, which is the 76ers getting Jimmy Butler. So Ben, just initial immediate thoughts on the trade and kind of that whole situation there.
Well, I wish I was on a group text with Markel Fultz and Ben Simmons. That's my initial thought because Jimmy Butler going in that locker room and onto that team. Look, he wants every team he's on to be his team. I mean, he pushed Derrick Rose out of the way in Chicago. Once he rose, I mean, once he, you know, had his big rise there, most improved player, he wanted to be the man. It was very, very clear Same deal in Minnesota. I mean, Wiggins, his whole reputation changed once, Jimmy Butler showed up. His whole role changed once Jimmy Butler showed up. I mean, for Markelle Fultz, he's obviously got some very, like, philosophical, fundamental questions. Like, is he even an NBA player at this point? So adding Jimmy Butler into this mix, the guy who's going to take away his shots and touches and, you know, basically, demote him just further down the pecking order. That to me is kind of a crisis move. If I was him or his people, I would be very, very uncomfortable with Jimmy Butler arriving. And then Ben Simmons, I think people forget Ben Simmons views himself as a number one overall pick, the heir to LeBron James, you know, a possible top five player in the NBA in the not too distant future. And now he's in a situation where he's trying to share, a big three with two other guys who really, really like the ball and who really aren't playmakers for their teammates. I mean, Butler can do it a little bit, but not really. And Joel Embiid's obviously score first, right? So if I'm Simmons, I'm kind of thinking like, is this still my team? Am I still viewed as like the future, you know, franchise savior? Or exactly what is the game plan here? And I think it's going to be tricky. I mean, spacing is absolutely going to be an issue. Depth's going to be an issue. I think the defense has a chance to be very high ceiling and, you know, possibly like top three in the league, because all three of those core guys can really play defense. But my real big takeaway is, you know, first of all, I'm glad it's over because this saga was awful to watch and Butler was just despicable in how he handled himself in Minnesota. But, you know, number two is, are they going to fit? Is Jimmy going to be able to balance with Ben Simmons and make it work? And is Markelle Fultz going to have like his love of basketball just further quashed by this move? I think those are huge questions for their organization, given that those guys are number one picks. And, Jimmy is going to be out for Jimmy first. He's trying to get paid this year. You can't fault him for that. You know, he's earned the right to, you know, get that big payday. But I worry that, you know, someone's going to need to sacrifice on that team and I'm not sure who it's going to be.
It's a great question because there's certainly those fit issues that you brought up. Like, who plays, do you play pick and roll with him and Embiid? Do you not have him play pick and roll? Do you have him play with Simmons? How do you do that? They don't play a lot of pick and roll anyway, but I'm just not sure exactly how that offense is going to work. I suppose the starting lineup is going to be Simmons, Redick, Embiid, Butler and who? Muscala? Chandler? One of the things that's come up here is who's the power forward? And do they have to make a move? I've heard people suggest that there's another move that has to come because they've got all of these two guards and they can't have all of these two guards.
Well, it's very tricky to trade Fultz at this point, right? And I think with Redick, I mean, he's your shooting, so you don't want to trade him. So I think you've got to play Jimmy up a position. I mean, I think I would start Chandler at the four. I mean, let's not forget, Jimmy can play some four too. And you can even in some circumstances, if you want to get crazy and play him at the five, like PJ Tucker style, you could even try to do that. I mean, he's that strong of a player. So I'm not so worried about the positional logjam as I am, whose turn is it, right? It reminds me a little bit of Oklahoma City last year where you had guys like Russell Westbrook, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, all individually pretty solid offensive players, at least, you know, before Melo fell off. But then when you put them together, they really didn't bring the best out of each other. Like the whole wasn't greater than the sum of the parts. And what I'm worried is if you take the ball out of Ben Simmons's hands, like consistently, it's going to be hard for the whole to be greater than the sum of the parts because he just shrinks the floor so much for his teammates. And, you know, he really just is a playmaker with the ball in his hands all the time. But if you're going to leave him in that lead playmaking role, now Jimmy is just standing around off the ball and he's not going to be happy doing that. So I think the first thing you do is you stagger Simmons and Butler as much as possible. You just make sure one of those guys is on the court at all times. And then you encourage both those guys to play two-man game with, Embiid so that he stays actively involved at all times. I mean, one thing that they should have on lock is free throws. I mean, Butler is a battering ram going to the basket when he's at his best. He can get to the stripe a lot. Embiid, you basically have to treat like Shaq sometimes and just hack him because otherwise he's going to get dunks. And I think Simmons, you know, has that ability to go downhill and force contact as well. So they might be able to make up for some of their lack of shooting by just putting a lot of pressure on the opposing, interior defense and be able to, you know, eke out some offense that way. But I'm just skeptical that their offense is going to work at a high enough level where if they play a Toronto or a Boston in like the second round of the playoffs, that they're going to be able to execute well enough together to get over that hump.
You say something that I wish the Pelicans, being the Locked On Pelicans host, would have been doing for years, which is just getting to the line more to make up for lack of shooting and other things. But a guy who's not shooting free throws well is Markelle Fultz. And man, he faked me out watching the clip of that. This is a huge concern for them, right?
I mean, it's been a concern. The guy forgot how to play basketball. And to me, look, I kind of painted myself into a corner because as soon as they came into the season starting him, I was like, look, this is a charity case situation. You're just gifting him minutes that he hasn't earned. If he was a real vet, he would go to Brett Brown and just say, look, I haven't earned this job. Like, let Redick have it and just, you know, make me earn my minutes, basically. And of course, he's not going to do that because he's young and doesn't really know how the league works yet. The problem with painting myself into that corner is now that it just keeps getting worse and worse week by week, and now he can't even shoot a free throw without his arm spasming, there's nowhere left for me to go to criticize him. It's like I've already gone too far. So, I mean, if I were them, I just wouldn't play him. I mean, I don't think he's ready to be on an NBA court mentally. You know, I've seen the reports about, oh, he's splitting with his trainer, like the guy who spent the last 4 or 5 months defending his honor on Twitter constantly. I mean, that's a kind of a red flag again. But I mean, to me, if you just take away the number one pick stuff, if you take away, you know, all the other questions that have kind of swirled about him, like, is he good enough right now as a player to be on the court if you're trying to win a title? And look, you don't trade for Jimmy Butler right now when he's in an expiring contract and wanting a huge payday unless you want to be a championship contender. I mean, that's why you do that move. If that's your viewpoint as an organization, I don't think Fultz can even be in your rotation.
That's wild. That's wild because they gave up the number one pick. They gave a potential second overall pick, depending on how the Kings, if the Kings come back down to earth, for the right to draft him, which they gave up Jason Tatum for the right to draft him. Think about having Jason Tatum on that team right now. That would be me as the Celtics guy. Of course, it's me rubbing it in a little bit, but
I mean, think about this. What if they just had Austin Rivers, you know, like replacement level third guard, whoever it would be, just some guy who, like, off the scrap heap, minimum contract player, like, mm-hmm. That would be better than what he's doing right now. And look, I mean, you carry that number one label with you for a long time. Just ask Anthony Bennett, Greg Oden, Michael Olowokandi. We can go right down the list of these guys, right? I mean, that's a lot of pressure. He wasn't ready for that pressure. He's still not ready for it. And, you know, frankly, one thing I wish Philly had done differently, and this is just a pet peeve of mine, they let him sit out summer league, you know, and by all accounts, he was like working out in the gym, going pretty hard, you know, at that same time. He should have been playing summer league, right? Like, mm-hmm. The time to go through that crazy free throw, like, spasm that he just went, work that out in Las Vegas when there's only like 3,000 fans instead of like the 18,000 when you're playing in front of the home crowd who are all like cheering you like you're a little kid every time you make a shot because they're trying to like will you back to like your normal form, right? And I just think he didn't adjust into the NBA's pressure cooker at all. They just kind of like threw him into the deep end and they granted him that starting spot. And then they sort of said, okay, well, you're not really starting in the second half. So already that's planting doubt in his head where it's like, well, wait a minute. Am I a starter or am I a charity starter? Like, am I a real starter or how are they treating me here? And I just think that they've screwed this whole situation up with him. I don't know that even if they had done everything according to a different plan that it would have worked because I think he's in that tough of a spot mentally right now. But to me, the answer is drastically reduce his role, let him sort of build his confidence back up sort of, you know, away from the spotlight and don't expect him to be a major contributor because he's just not capable of it right now.
It's a wild place that they've gone into. So we're running up against the time here. So let's just shift away from the Sixers a little bit. Quick Caris LeVert update. Looks like he avoided a serious, serious injury today.
Can I ask you guys a question about that? Did you watch the video?
Nope.
I didn't.
No, I can't do that. I'm squeamish. There's a reason I'm not a doctor and on a podcast here with you guys because that it just sounded bad.
I asked people if it was Hayward-like because I saw the Hayward injury and they said, yep. And I'm like, okay, I've already seen that injury, and I don't want to see it again. So, but it came out today that he avoided no fracture, unlike Gordon Hayward who broke his leg. This just a dislocation. Which in the grand scheme of things, they're talking about him being back in a couple of months. So great news for Caris LeVert, who was having a great season and was already becoming like the league's darling this year. And the fact that, now that he's coming back from this injury, I think he's got every fan everywhere kind of rooting for him to come back and resume the rise that he was on before the injury.
Well, I'm kind of proud of us. I feel like we represent some evolution of basketball fandom, you know, where we've all learned to be smart enough not to go and watch that video. I think 5 years ago, we would have all accidentally watched it, right? No, I think you're right. I mean, Caris LeVert has been the hipster MVP, right? Like, if you're the hipster guy who's watching League Pass constantly, he is your new favorite player. The quotes coming out of their locker room were incredible. Like, you know, he's being called the heart and soul. Everybody was saying, like, it's just a horrible day for the entire organization, and they really were bracing for the worst, obviously. So rarely in that case in the NBA where all these guys are around injuries constantly, they know what, you know, what serious is, does somebody get sort of a second chance almost? And that's what that press release that they sent out felt like. It felt like they were celebrating a second chance, that he had just, you know, basically had a miracle diagnosis, and, you know, his career is not going to be forever altered by this. And that's amazing news. You know, I think for Brooklyn, they have been searching for any kind of a foundational piece for years now, obviously. And it's been a huge uphill climb. They've had to just, like, you know, face all these, you know, difficult situations in terms of keeping guys bought in. And, you know, to have a guy who represents all of those things, who's really worked on his game, they've kind of grown him up internally, to have his career just go sideways would have been horrible, not only for him, but for them too. And, you know, I look around that team. It's not a, you know, D'Angelo Russell. I don't think he can be that guy. I mean, you can sort of talk yourself into Dinwiddie maybe. You look at the rest of that roster. I like Jared Allen. He's fine. But if there's going to be one guy who winds up sticking and being a really good player for them for the next 5 years, you would think it would be LeVert. And so, you know, I just echo what you just said, which is, you know, a huge sigh of relief for them, and obviously for him specifically too.
Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated. Follow him on Twitter at Ben Golliver. It's very simple. Ben, thank you for joining us on the Wednesday show.
Yeah,
gentlemen, thanks so much. Oh, my pleasure, guys. Take care.
We're coming right back with our Stan Lee superhero tribute and, of course, the game of the night. But first, I want to remind everybody that the Locked On NBA Net has got a great social media thing going on Twitter. It's every Locked On NBA host kind of curated in this awesome way on game nights. It's amazing. You follow Locked On NBA Net on Twitter to get every one of our hosts and their takes as things are going on. It's a great way to sample what our hosts are all about. And then on Locked On NBA Net Instagram, on the stories, you get a minute every day. So it's 15 second segments on the Locked On Instagram stories, and you sample the podcast that way. And then on the Locked On NBA Net feed, you have the longer clips from the podcast. So if you're not sure about what podcast, maybe you don't want to subscribe, but you have the opportunity to sample the podcast, and maybe you can just tune in on specific shows as you feel you want to listen to. So Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Instagram. Okay, Jake, game of the night, Nuggets, Houston, and then the Nuggets, they've lost again, and they are scuffling now. Rockets kind of coming back, kind of holding their own, getting back into kind of Rockets basketball. Nuggets, they seemed like they were for real, but now they've lost four games in a row.
Yeah, this wasn't how you might have thought this game was going to happen. The Nuggets only scoring 99 points isn't exactly what they're looking to do. The biggest story, though, I think, is Houston getting a very big game that might go unnoticed from PJ Tucker. His defense in this one was sorely needed for them after losing guys like Trevor Ariza, Luke Baamute, to get someone who can kind of guard that wing and front court position that both those guys filled really well. He was kind of the MVP in this one for me, but it's not going to show up in the box score given he only had 12 points.
Yeah, I think the big thing here is that the Nuggets have kind of fallen back down to earth. Their defense has kind of started to let them down, giving up 109 points to the Rockets, and the fact that they lost when James Harden didn't have a big Harden-esque night, 22 points. He did have 11 assists. And when Harden has 11 assists, it's hard to overcome that. The Nuggets didn't get huge games from Gary Harris. They didn't get a huge game from Jamal Murray. I'm a Celtics guy. I've watched Jamal Murray drop 48 on my team to come out and have 15 points on good shooting, but still only 15 points. They didn't get that all around game that they have been getting from everybody in their hot start. So now the question now is, after losing four straight and falling a little bit, are the Nuggets kind of regressing to the mean here, and are they going to, they started out so hot that people were looking at them as a second or third best team in the league, in the West at least. Now they're still third, but they're so close to, because the West is so packed, dropping to the bottom of the standings. I wonder if the Nuggets are just kind of getting over that hot start and kind of regressing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think they are, you know, and the truth ultimately is probably something in the middle. They're not this bad where they're 0-4 bad. They probably weren't as good as that hot start. I mean, they had some pretty big performances, but you can see, if you can kind of take Jokic out of his game, and he put up decent box score numbers, but did he feel that impactful in this one? Not really for his, you know, the usual performances he can kind of show up with. So I think that's kind of a big thing here. Just kind of one of those weird off nights for whatever reason for him. I believe in Gary Harris. I believe in Jamal Murray, and it annoys me that this team is probably better than what we've seen recently. Also, Monte Morris off the bench with 15 points for him, 19 points for him, was a pretty big addition. And if they can get that bench unit when they get healthy, get Will Barton back, they're still going to be a good team.
I think so. I don't think anybody ever expected the Denver defense to hold up throughout the course of the season. And they had been winning games early on with their defense. So I think a little bit of regression was expected. So them losing a few games in a row, not a complete shock. I never expected them to be the second seed in the West. Them falling to like the third or fourth, maybe fifth seed in the West is not unexpected. So I think this is kind of par for the course.
Yeah, just it's how it should be, right?
Yeah, yeah. The other game in the NBA on Tuesday night was the Cleveland Cavaliers just trouncing the Charlotte Hornets. A bad loss for the Hornets. It's just one of those games where I think, Jake, that you just chalk it up. Cleveland missing a bunch of guys. Charlotte came out a little flat. Bunch of guys missing a ton of shots. Kemba Walker just 2 of 16. Bad game for him. So just one of those nights for the Hornets.
They shot 34.7% from the field. That's, you're not going to win games if you're doing that. It's just, you know, sometimes it's as simple as a make or miss league, and they missed and they lost.
They missed a lot, and it's a bad loss, but that's okay. Teams have bad losses. That just happens. Okay. That's the night in the NBA. We've been getting lucky. Last season, I felt like we had like 10, 11, 12 game slates. We've been lucky so far with 3 and 4 game slates early on.
We've also avoided players only, which has been a wonderful thing. It's on Mondays now. We don't need to worry about that.
That's great. You know, I want to say there's a spectacular self-own in the promos for players only. That in Chris Webber says, you have to be a real fan to watch this. Like, only real fans can get past the players only broadcasts of these games. Like, and these guys are individually okay. I just feel like they need somebody to be a better quarterback. Otherwise, they just devolve into, hey, here's a bunch of players just hanging around and just shooting the breeze, and you kind of forget about the game. That's a complete aside. Let's get into some fun. Our third segments on the Locked On NBA podcast are about fun, and nothing's fun about losing a legend like Stan Lee, but Stan Lee has been around forever, and he's lived an amazing life. And comic book legend, he's one of those guys. I always say that when you're the best of the best at something, everybody knows who you are. Like, name a cellist. Everybody names Yo-Yo Ma. Like, who can name any other cellists? But everybody knows who Yo-Yo Ma is. Name a comic book guy. Stan Lee is the comic book guy. Well, according to me. Like, you
know
every comic book guy.
I'm a big comic book guy. But, like, no, like, he is. That's who you think of with this. So I don't think you're saying anything wrong with this.
So, Stan Lee, we lost him. He passed away this week. So, we are going to give our NBA superheroes, guys in the NBA, star players, who are their superhero equivalents? I am not a big comic book guy. I had to do a bunch of research for this. I came up with a couple of good ones. You, though, are a comic book guy.
I could have like a huge list. We were like, let's do two. And all of a sudden I think of like nine.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to limit it to two so we could do this segment in the amount of time that we're allotted. So
yeah.
You go first. You're the guy. You go first.
I've got two real ones and I'm going to throw two joke ones that take 30 seconds total in here.
Okay, go.
But we've got Steph Curry as Hawkeye. Hawkeye's a member of the Avengers. It's the super team of the Marvel universe, just like the Warriors are the super team of our NBA universe. He's a sharpshooter, you know, bow and arrow shooting from distance, Curry launching threes from wherever. And you could also say he's kind of the heart and soul of the team. And I think that works for both of them.
Okay, I like that. So my first guy is going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I'm going with Mr. Fantastic of the Fantastic Four, mostly because he can just stretch himself and become this, like, elastic guy. And that's the one thing I think of when it comes to Giannis Antetokounmpo, is that he's just crazy limbs, and he can seemingly – just stretch himself into absurd proportions to dunk over people. So I thought that was a pretty good kind of comparison.
No, I think that's perfect. Also, his arms don't look real. So I think kind of nailed that one. The next one I got going a little bit homerish here with Anthony Davis, but I'm going to throw out someone you might not expect, and we're going with Shazam, the former Captain Marvel. His superpower is just kind of magic. He turns from like a boy to this huge superhero and has magic abilities, and it's just kind of what AD does. It's not human. He went through that huge growth spurt where he was a guard and then just grew basically overnight into being like a 7-foot monster, and it's just kind of magical the things he does on the court.
I buy that. I don't know much about him, but I buy that comparison. I like that. Okay, my other guy is Russell Westbrook, and I went with the Punisher, and I just like the idea of Punisher as this guy who's willing to like kind of toe the line between good guy and bad guy, like his. The things I know about Punisher and knowing a little bit about him, just knowing that Tim Duncan has a strong affinity for Punisher.
In the knee brace of the logo.
Exactly, yeah. So I've seen a bit about him, and I know that the Punisher is brutal. He's like willing to do things that other superheroes aren't willing to do. Like he's out there, he's doing bad guy stuff in the mold of a good guy.
Yeah, anti-hero.
Yeah. And that's a great way to put it.
That's exactly what Westbrook is. Like, you want to like him.
Yeah.
But man, then you watch him play enough and it's like, can you pass the ball or can you have a little bit better shot selection? But he gets the job done.
Yeah. He's willing to do the dirty work and do things that other people aren't willing to do. Like, I thought that was a good comparison.
So I've got two quick joke ones. Okay. And
I got one.
I told you I think Carmelo Anthony is Daredevil because Daredevil's blind, just like Carmelo Anthony's shot selection. And then the other one I really came up with is Chris Kaman is Swamp Thing.
Okay.
You seen him? He looks like a swamp monster.
Yeah, we could go a lot of different ways with that. My joke one is Vince Carter is Deadpool because he just can't be killed. He's just, no matter what, he just keeps coming back. All of a sudden, Vince Carter is a hawk. Like, oh, okay. I just don't remember that he's a hawk. And now he's a hawk. And he just keeps coming back. No matter what, he just keeps coming back. He's super cool. And I can't get over it. He's still dunking on people. He's still out there dunking. He is totally Deadpool. He should play in that like jumpsuit with the mask.
Yeah, I would pay to watch that.
That's our little tribute to Stan Lee, who is a legend. And look, my biggest thing with Stan Lee is I'm a Simpsons guy. I'm a big Simpsons fan, and Stan Lee had some amazing cameos with the Simpsons, like self-deprecating, just awesome. And look, he had one of the best quotes just about being an entertainer. I don't have it exactly off the top of my head, but he said that he used to be jealous of people who were built bridges and things like that. And then you realize that as an entertainer, that you have value, that if people didn't have entertainment, that they would go nuts. And so, I really appreciate a guy who, even though that's not the medium I personally really enjoyed, like I've enjoyed his contributions to my entertainment, and I appreciate what he has given to us as a whole, and I think it's just been great. So this is our little tribute to Stan Lee, just a legendary career, legendary life. That has been the Locked On NBA podcast here on a Wednesday. Hope you've listened. Hope you've enjoyed enough to subscribe if you're a new listener. And if you are a regular listener, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast enough to give us that 5-star rating and a good review. Once again, if you'd like to get in touch with us or know more about us, I am John Corrales. I am the co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can find my work on Boston.com, Celtics.com, and Patreon.com/John Corrales. And my Twitter is @RedsArmy_John.
And I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com. And you can find me on Twitter. It's @NolaJake.
David Locke, he is the Lock of Locked On Podcast Network. He's got the Thursday NBA show. That's tomorrow. Tune in for that. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On NBA podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.